Audio on demand, podcast, streaming live. Calgary's only 24/7 all sports radio. Sportsnet.ca/960. The Big Show continues on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Brought to you by The Comedy Cave. Tickets always $10. If it's comedy you crave, come to The Cave.
The Edmonton Oilers went without a captain last season, but there are some who believe they have solved that problem for the coming year. Because going into year two with the team, year two in the National Hockey League, there are many believe 19-year-old Connor McDavid is the right choice to be the next captain of the Edmonton Oilers. And McDavid was asked about that today.
It would mean so much. That's the biggest, the biggest honor, I think. It would definitely be, you know, an accomplishment that, I would be the most proud of. So, but that's still up to be determined. And I don't want to talk about it too much. I don't think that.
I got to say, as much as we like to see that team up north of us continually fail, it's not like a lot of people are losing a lot of sleep when they don't do well. I'm kind of at this point, like, give the guy the captaincy. Like, give to Connor McDavid the C. He's the best player on the team. He's definitely the team's meal ticket for the next decade or more. And you might as well install him as the leader now. Like, I don't worry about him dealing with the pressure or anything like that. And you know what kind of sealed it for me in my head when I was thinking
What's
about
that?
It goes against what the Oilers have always kind of done. Like, they've always kind of looked to, like, the good guy in the locker room. Jason Smith was the captain for the longest time, and Andrew Ferentz was the captain. It's like, no, like, give it to one of the guys who's supposed to be leading this team into the next generation. Mm-hmm. And because it is different than what the Oilers have done, that makes it good, because what the Oilers have done over the last decade is not the way you want to run your team. So Jonathan Toews got a captaincy at 20. Crosby got the C at 19. Landeskog got it at 19. Put the C on McDavid. He can deal with it.
He's your future. They did, you know, they were way back when they put it on Wayne. That was sort of controversial at the time, because he was still the young buck, but everybody knew he was going to be the leader, and it turned out to be great. It's when you talk about the NHL captaincy, and especially with guys who don't know much about hockey, they kind of go, what's the big deal?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because in football, it's like, whatever, right? And they're, you know,
15 captains.
Yeah, no one cares. And it's the one sport where it really, really matters. And you look at some of the, you know, just kind of flipping through them. There's a few vacancies too. The Jets, I guess, got one, and the Leafs got one, and Nashville, I guess, they can figure out that's a big one to change up.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, right? Florida is as well, and Carolina, and the Edmonton Oilers. But I remember when after Jerome got traded, and then it was like, well, who's going to be the captain? And there was a little bit of it could be Camilleri, it could be Glenn Cross. Like, hindsight being 2020, like
right,
are you crazy? Like, what were you even? Why was that even a thought? It was the perfect choice here, and I think it's the same for different reasons. But McDavid is. He's your guy, right? Obviously. And if he doesn't do it with you, you're not going anywhere without him. So get on his back.
And I know a couple of texts like, yeah, give a kid with 45 NHL games the C, or he's too young to be the boss. But at this point, like, why not? I mean, yeah, you could give it to Milan Lucic, and he's going to be there for the next however many years. He signed a big, long contract. He's been to Stanley Cup Finals. He's won cups, all that type of stuff. That's great, but Connor McDavid's the meal ticket on this team, and if he is going to be, and it's not just Oilers fans who think that Connor McDavid is going to be as good as Crosby or in the same category as Toews. Like, it's people league-wide. It's pundits everywhere who say McDavid is going to be that good. And if he ends up being that good, I mean, what's the difference if he gets the C now or if he gets the C in 4 years? I mean, he's your guy. Might as well install him now. And again, it's a different way of thinking in Edmonton, and everything they can do differently than what they've done in the past is probably the way to go about things right now in Edmonton, because what they have done has worked terribly to this point. So I think, I mean, I know that, you know, there's maybe a bit of a groundswell in this city because of the rivalry with the team and how much we are inundated with how good they're going to be over the last decade. But he's a pretty special player. Watching the guy play live, it's pretty incredible. There are very few players as good as Connor McDavid in this league. Well, and where he's going to be, there are going to be even fewer.
What was amazing to see when I saw him live is he can do all those special things at full speed where most players can't. Like, he can, the way he moves and the way he kind of can move the puck around and do it at a full, like, skating hard. I have not seen that. Like, I'm trying to think of a player that was similar to that.
I don't know if there's a better skater in the National Hockey League than Connor McDavid, at least among forwards. The guy, it's incredible. He's 19 years old. I've never seen a guy skate like that before.
Yeah, and he can skate himself out of trouble. He can get himself behind. He can make guys look silly and has made him look silly. He can stay healthy. But, I mean, the whole thing is, should he be the captain? Like, and if not, and maybe Lucic, you had said, but he's a newcomer too. I think Connor McDavid's your guy.
Why not? At this, I get it. He's played less than half a season, but
who do you think the worst captain in the NHL is?
The worst captain in the NHL.
I'll give you a little hint.
it would have been Dustin Brown, but now they've put it on Kopitar, so that's the right call.
Who's the Columbus Blue Jackets? And maybe this is not fair, but the Columbus Blue Jackets captain.
Captain of the Blue Jackets.
As people drive down the Deerfoot. Huh. Yeah. I'm trying to test him here.
Matty just said, is that who it is?
Yeah.
Nick Foligno?
Yeah.
I did not guess that, by the way. That was Matty Rose, who I'm not going to take credit for that. Okay, Nick Foligno's the captain of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
He's on my list of maybe not the best of all time. New Jersey?
They got Andy Green in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking... Captain over here.
Yeah. He knows. But, okay, all right. Good solid defenseman, but, okay. So those... I've sort of taken your question and turned it around a little bit, and, like, who are the worst captains?
Well, we've certainly made Matt Rose look good, because he got both those guys without even thinking about it.
Yeah, he's like the guy in Jeopardy with the answers. Like, it's like, oh, yeah, no, I think you're thinking of the Ming Dynasty. Yeah, well, you got the answers there, Alex. Thank you.
So condescending.
Important information, but just like, tidbits.
Tidbits, yeah.
So condescending, Alex. Yeah, I'm sure you really knew that was an abstract painting, right?
That's right.
Yes. Speaking of Edmonton, seems like former Oiler Taylor Hall has finally accepted his trade to New Jersey. There's a big BioSteel camp going on in Toronto this week, so a lot of big names are in Toronto. Hall spoke today, and you listen to Taylor Hall here. Seems like maybe he's coming to a little bit more of acceptance, a little bit more at peace with his trade to New Jersey.
I'm excited for a new opportunity, a new start, a new group of guys in a new city. I had a lot of fun in Edmonton. I enjoyed my time there. But it's going to be a lot different for sure. I'm looking forward to maybe having a little bit more anonymity. But that was one of the special things about playing in Edmonton, too, is how much they cared and how passionate the fans were.
It's funny because I was just reading on Twitter after Logan Couture replaced Jamie Benn on the World Cup roster today. And a couple of people said, why wasn't it Taylor Hall? And I thought to myself, it still hasn't even sunk in for me that Hall is a member of the New Jersey Devils. Like, I know what happened, and I'm aware that he is a member of the New Jersey Devils, but I still think of him as an Edmonton Oiler. Like, it's still really strange to me that
there's a
happened.
Lot of stuff that's happened in the NHL, and we're in the business in the summer, and you kind of forget these things.
Yeah.
That's why we're going to have a real humdinger of a preview show come October. Get everybody caught up to date, because there's a bunch of stuff that
It's been a busy summer.
You forget stuff that's going on. It's like, oh yeah, remember that? Right.
Has your opinion changed at all on the Hall deal? Like, I first of all, I don't even know what your opinion was. I hated the deal for
Edmonton. I thought it was dumb.
I thought
I think they had to do it.
See, but I think everybody kind of looks at it and says, geez, that wasn't a great return for Taylor Hall. But where it really kind of gets to me is where you start hearing people say, but they had to do it. And I don't buy that. Like, If you can't get the most possible for your player, then don't trade him. Like, I feel like, okay, if Taylor Hall's value wasn't strong right now, then wait till his value is stronger at the trade deadline.
They need a defenseman in the worst way, and I just don't know if there was any on the free agent pile that they could go get. I don't know. And I think that was the problem. That's the problem of that team. I think it's, you know, they certainly have the forwards, but their defense and their whole structure has been, how many interviews did we have with guys that I think about, that when we'd send guys in the Oilers dressing room and then guy would go, yeah, geez, the way we're playing here, I just can't believe it. I've never seen it like this.
Guys who leave Edmonton and go to another team, they're like, yeah, it's a little different here. Structure exists.
Yeah, it seems somewhat different than that.
That we practice things that we actually want to do in the game. So it's a little different here.
Yeah.
Although I think that has changed since Todd McLellan's taken over the team.
What do you make of this? And people, I imagine, text this in all the time because the rumors are flying around. It's like, well, if the Flames can't seem to find cash for Gaudreau, maybe just sign him and trade him and for Taylor Hall.
Apparently that got floated out of, I don't know what show it was, but apparently it got floated on one of the shows in Edmonton. And yeah, but once a day, somebody will text in different numbers all the time saying, have you heard about this? Have you heard about this? I mean, yeah, it's been out there for, I would guess, probably a couple weeks now that it's been out there. I don't know how much credence I give it at this point.
I don't think they're thinking of that just yet.
I mean, I still think the priority is getting Gaudreau signed at this point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I wouldn't have traded Hall unless I knew I was getting the best possible return for him. And no knock on Adam Larson. The poor guy has just been absolutely... They get this guy for him. It's like, poor Adam Larson. He's not Gary
Lehman.
He's not Gary Lehman. He's a good, solid defenseman. But I think they could have gotten more
best
had
friend,
they waited.
Right? You seem...
Exactly.
Schneider said, yeah, he's awesome.
Stay-at-home guy.
Yeah. Always looking after.
What about Hall's fit in New Jersey, though? Because I'm not overly... Because Hall goes from being counted on to be the guy in Edmonton to really he's going to be counted... Who else is in New Jersey? Like, Mike Camilleri's coming off a good year, and Adam Henrique played with Taylor Hall in Windsor, and they won a Memorial Cup together and all that. But Taylor Hall's still being counted on to be the guy offensively in New Jersey. So he goes from... Now, granted, there's going to be a little more anonymity. There's going to be less of a spotlight on him playing in New Jersey as opposed to playing in a Canadian market with expectations like Edmonton. But in terms of what's going to be asked from him on the team, it's not really all that different. He's still going to be asked to be the guy in New Jersey. And I don't know, like, supporting cast isn't great. I don't know how much I'm expecting Taylor Hall to take a huge step forward with the Devils.
I'm not sure what the next step for him is. I'm always kind of curious about that. We heard all kinds of stories about maybe he wasn't off the ice, maybe as dedicated to practicing and working out and all this kind of stuff. You know, I don't know. Is that true? Who knows? But in New Jersey... you're right. He can be walk down the streets and no one will know him. But some players thrive with that kind of stuff, and some players just it's terrible for them.
Yeah.
So it might be the worst thing for him, but I think he's got so much upside.
I've always thought he is a legitimate superstar in this league.
Yeah. Big, strong, can score, and just needs to get it together maybe between the ears a little bit. And, but you're right. I mean, the pressure is not going to be any less amongst his teammates.
Yeah, and amongst ownership. The team is asking him to do.
Yeah, like, we're paying you this. We're expecting you to...
We need you to be a point-per-game guy. Yeah, we need you to be our leading scorer. Because, Camilleri is, 32, 33 years old now? And maybe a little bit younger than that. And Henrique is, just a little bit older than Hall, I think. But, Henrique is good player. Don't get me wrong. Really nice center. But I don't think he's quite at the same level as Hall. So now you come in with some expectations in New Jersey. I wonder how he handles that.
That's the one team in the NHL I never know what to expect from.
Me neither.
You think, yeah.
Even going back to when Brent Sutter coached him, I remember going into the first year when Brent Sutter coached him, I'm like, this team is going to be god-awful. And they ended up making the playoffs both years with Brent Sutter. I'm like, how? How is this team making the playoffs? And then there's been, they made the Stanley Cup final. Like, that was only 4 years ago they played
against
the Stanley
LA,
Cup
yeah.
final. And, and then they haven't, really done much since. They've had a couple of years of them in close to the playoffs, but they haven't made it. Yeah, I don't know what to expect from the Devils this
year. And then you watch their games on Game Center Live or whatever, and they pan the crowd, and nobody's there, and super quiet.
Would you go to Newark?
No. No, well, I wouldn't.
Madison Square Garden? Are you sure you wouldn't?
No, well,
I mean, Midtown Manhattan's a fairly, you know, fairly safe place. You can walk around at night and not feel all the... Yeah, Newark, New Jersey, that is one of the most terrifying places I've ever been in my entire life. Like, it was scary.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I'm going to have to get a cab here. I don't have much time to be
in
the postgame
show. Only other place that I've ever been where after an event there was a massive police presence outside the venue. The other place was Gary, Indiana, when they were playing. Like, I was a 19-year-old
kid. Was that the Railcats?
The Gary South Shore Railcats. Yeah, you'd walk outside and after the game... And there would literally be on every corner 11 cop cars or something. You're like, what is going on? It was after every game. They just wanted to make sure that everything was good and you got home safely from the ball game. That's the way it was. And Newark was the
same.
And the
Railcats win another one here.
It's a lot of trains.
Was it the Vipers?
That was the Vipers, yeah.
Vipers, right.
That was my first ever road trip was Gary, Indiana. Trains everywhere and... Something else.
Oh, my God.
Big Show brought to you by the Comedy Cave, where today is BOGO night. Jack's solemn promise to you at the Comedy Cave is that you're never paying more than $10. But that doesn't mean that every once in a while he's going to sweeten the deal. And one of the days he's going to sweeten the deal for you is Tuesday, BOGO night at the Comedy Cave. Buy one, get one. So take the lady. You can go with the boys. You're getting two for the price of one. Tickets $10. And tonight, that $10 goes even further. Featured headliner is Chris Gordon this week. ComedyCave.com or 403-287-1120 to make your reservation and buy tickets. For anyone who has questioned the power and the impact of live sports television, I've got another example of how it remains extremely relevant. It's around the corner on the Big Show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Game 7 wins, Game 7 losses, coach hirings, coach firings. It's always important to you. It's always important to us. Calgary's only all sports radio, Sportsnet 960. Steinberg, Kerr, The Big Show on Sportsnet 960. Brought to you by The Comedy Cave. Tickets always $10. If it's comedy you crave, come to The Cave.
The power of live television wins again. Now, I know that, you know, Pat Steinberg, Kelly Kirsch, we're both radio guys through and through. But in this digital age, many have questioned the merits of live television. There's not a lot of people questioning the merits of terrestrial radio anymore. There was a little while where you're like, well, watch out for that satellite thing. It's going to take over. Satellite's doing fine, but there's still absolutely a place for radio.
Here.
Knowing how important it is to be local. A lot of people have wondered about the merits of live television, though, and over-the-air television, because competition like YouTube and Netflix and ShowMe and Hulu and
PVRs,
right? But one argument that has always remained that makes live television relevant is live sports and how it's going to keep TV afloat. And I don't know if that's always going to be the case because I don't know what the next technological breakthrough is going to be. But I'll tell you this right now, with evidence that is 24 hours old, it still is the case right now because case in point are the 2016 Olympics in Rio. And I'll do a side-by-side comparison that tells you how important live television can still be. So NBC, who paid, I think, like $12 billion to get coverage of the Olympics exclusively in the United States through 2032, they saw their ratings drop significantly from 2012 in London because, not solely because, but they rely largely on being tape delayed and not doing things live. Their network coverage is tape delayed, and NBC saw their ratings drop 17% overall from 2012 to 2016, and even more in the younger demographics.
Despite the Americans having one hell of a team that got all kinds of medals and all kinds of stories.
Well, and to make that exact, and their streaming, their live streaming on their website did very, very well. Because people will go to other, people will follow along on Twitter. People will go online. People will find illegal streams. Like, people are savvy enough technologically to be like, okay, they're gonna play the 200-meter sprint 3 hours after it happens and pretend that it's live. No, I'm a little savvier than that. I'm gonna watch it live. So NBC's ratings down 17% overall from one Olympics to the next. Then there's CBC north of the border. Right? In this country, CBC made a huge commitment to live events across the network and their partners, Sportsnet and TSN. Like, there was very little tape-delayed stuff. They would replay things. They would show things later on and package things up that have already happened, but they never pretended that it was live because when things were live, well, they were live. And CBC saw their ratings rise overall 11%, and their prime time average was up 23% from 2012 because in prime time, they made a huge commitment of bringing you live coverage. Scott Russell would throw here and then throw there, and they would be bringing you as much as they can live. And to me, that's all you need to know about how live sports can continue to be relevant. And people are too savvy to, you know, be fooled by tape delayed stuff. The ABC Wide World of Sports doesn't work anymore.
I was just going to bring that up where you saw something like 2 weeks ago and that sort of thing. People don't want to see that anymore. They want it right now. I always think about, like, for me, I'm sort of in both. I don't know what term they use because I'm tech savvy enough. I do all that kind of stuff, but I still have my foot in the old days where before we had internet and we had turntables and stuff. So a little bit of both. But it's funny how things have changed for me. It's like I am not going to wait for information anymore. No chance.
Exactly.
If you think I'm going to read the newspaper the next day about stuff I already know, no chance. I will read it if there's interesting kind of background to it. Like,
give me compelling content, right?
Yeah. If it was a Flames game, okay, I already know it. I've seen the highlights. I've been to the game, all that kind of stuff. But if you can get into the locker room and you're Eric Francis and give me some quotes and give me some perspective that I didn't know, I gotcha.
Exactly.
Scott Mitchell, before he took off to Toronto and doing the CFL stuff, he was like, okay, I'll read him because he's going to have something that I won't know. But my tolerance for waiting around for something, forget it.
Well, and specifically in North America, where, you know, the Western culture is all about, okay, now. There's not a lot of patience left. And for NBC to try, and I'll be honest with you, I watched a lot of NBC because it worked for me, because I'm like, I knew I was watching a tape delayed and I knew the results already, but I still wanted to see it. And so if I missed it live on CBC, I'd watch it on NBC and I'd be like, okay, well, I'm watching it as if it's live. I already know that Bolt wins the 200, or I know that Phelps wins the gold or whatever. I still want to see it. But if that wasn't the case and I was living in Los Angeles or Portland, especially on the West Coast where it was delayed by like 3-4 hours sometimes, like, of course you're going to try and find CBC's coverage, or of course you're going to find the BBC's coverage, or go online and watch in another language or something like that. Why wouldn't you?
I would have been interested because obviously we get the NBC, like the over-the-air channel, but they also have subsidiary things. And I know we have CNBC, but they don't have the Olympics on CNBC. You can't watch, they'll throw a bunch of NHL playoff games on there down in the States, for instance. They can't allow that here, obviously. It would have been neat if we were in like Seattle or something like that to see what their subsidiary networks were doing. Were they covering it live? Did they have anything live?
I remember when I was in the States, I was in Texas during the 2012 Olympic Games in London, and they did, I watched a lot of NBC Sports Network, and that's where they had most of their live stuff. And I think they have a couple different NBC Sports Network channels, if I remember correctly, and MSNBC and CNBC. So that's where you watch most of your live coverage, was on NBC Sports Network. But not everybody has NBC Sports Network. And that's why I appreciated what CBC did so much, is because they, other than the final day where they, you know, committed commercial free coverage, understandably, to the Tragic the Hip's final concert. And other than that, they dedicated hours and hours of primetime stuff to the Olympics and live Olympic coverage, where there could be mistakes, where there could be fumbles, where it wasn't smooth, whereas NBC opted for the very slick,
very
prepackaged
slick,
Bob Costas going right to the arena where, right as Bob Costas finishes talking, all of a sudden the American National Anthem starts right on cue. It's all very, like, you know, top 40 countdown, like, and you're like, I don't know if this flies anymore. People want to see it live. People want to have that option.
And we talked about it yesterday, but I do I do like the way things have worked with CBC and sharing with Sportsnet and TSN. And everybody knows Bell and Rogers go at it like, you know, they're rivals. But yet they're in bed with some things too, because that's the nature of the beast. I thought it was cool. And they'd say, okay, by the way, on TSN 2,
yep,
this is this. Okay, Sportsnet 1 over here. And it's like, wow, did that ever help me? Like, okay, good. I was wondering where that Rugby Sevens game is. Yep. Okay, I'll flip over there. Thank you. It was really well done. And I think it's neat. And I'm sort of, and the time zone worked perfectly for me. I'm not sure if we talked about it, the South Korea thing is going to work at all.
Yeah, you know, it's like 14, 15 hours ahead.
Tokyo's not going to work either. We just have to get used to a different thing. But yeah, it was neat to see that, because it's, you pay so much for the rights, and to have especially the economy in the States is starting to pick up now, that they probably thought they, you know, cash in a little bit, but maybe not so much.
Billions of dollars, and they've got it exclusively through 2032, and they have their ratings fall that much. And as much as their streaming business was huge, you don't make anywhere near the same amount of money on streaming.
Chance.
Your network, and this is going to hurt them for 2018 and 2020. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's going to like take a significant chunk out of their ad revenue, whereas CBC is feeling pretty good about 2018. And, hey, look, you know, we were up, and our coverage proved that we could still do this. So I give them a real tip of the hat for what they
did. Yeah, it was good. It was neat to see, and we'll see what happens. And, you know, CBC's been okay in my books for a change. So that's
and, good. You know, not being, and I might get some vitriol on the text line, but not being a massive Tragically Hip fan myself, I fully understood the significance and the importance of what was going on. They've just never been, you know, my favorite band. Being from this country and living in this country my entire life, I still know every word to every song and can play Name That Tune and, you know, oh, that's Bob Cajun, you know, that's Poets, or that's, you know, New Orleans Is Sinking or whatever. But you know, I wasn't caught up in the Tragically Hip fever the same way. I think it's terrible what's happening to Gord Downie. I think it's sad that they've been forced to, you know, call it a career before they'd like to. But it wasn't the same type of, you know, emotional experience for me. But give the CBC credit. You know, I watched probably about 45 minutes here and there of the concert. They did a pretty good job on it.
And I think I'm a little bit more of a fan than you. And I thought it was really well done. I thought it was, the beauty was in the simplicity of it all. They didn't try to really, they didn't have, let's go to this clip, let's go to that.
All about the music.
Here's the guys backstage getting ready. Here they are going to play, right? Okay, here's an angle of this, here's an angle of that. I thought it sounded good. Thought it was pretty slick. And I was just a neat kind of scene in Calgary, just going from place to place and hearing the stories about places on Stephen Avenue and 17th Avenue, like full sound, full blast. And it was cool. It was a neat thing to think. And I hope they replay it sometime. I assume they're going to.
I would imagine so. Yeah. I mean, they and what, 12 million people ended up watching it, whatever it was.
Average 4 million every minute or whatever it is.
My brother manages it, Joey Eau Claire, and he's telling me that he was getting calls 3 and 4 days before saying, are you playing playing the Hip concert? And people were going to restaurants, and you were saying at the Deerfoot Casino, they were playing it like it was a UFC event.
I thought they were going to have UFC on. And then I go, no, that's the Hip and it's loud. And it's all right. And people into it, dressed up in their hockey jerseys and stuff. It was very cool. And it was funny how the buzz has sort of kept going with that. People keep talking about it.
People watched it. That's and it's funny because again, it's not like they were ever my a band that I would seek out, and I always appreciated what they meant and their longevity and all that type of stuff. But they were just never my cup of tea all the time musically. But even I'm I better watch this because this is a seminal moment.
It's a pretty big deal
for the country. And so to see 12 million people and I know you're a part of that
And just the dynamic of it, right? Because you can't. I'm trying to think of another, now have there been bigger bands, Celine Dion, Alanis Morissette, Shania Twain, Rush, Brian Adams, there's some big, big Canadian acts, but just the way this was, everybody knew this was likely the last show ever. You don't normally have that sort of situation where you're public about your terminal illness and you go up and you sound that good for your last show and you're able to do your last show like that. I don't know if you'll ever see anything like that again.
If they do end up replaying, which I would imagine they will, how much longer will it be once they put commercials in. Because you know they won't do it commercial free again. So I wonder how much longer it ends up being.
Probably 4 hours. In. Probably 4 hours or so.
We told you about an opportunity for you to win a trip to Las Vegas. Well, we've got also got an opportunity for you to hang out with the Morning Show Boys in Mexico. And you can do so all for a very, very, it's very, very simple to do so. So here's the deal. New West Travel presents Boomer, Warner, and Pinder live on location in Mexico in late November, November 20th to 27th, and you can be there with them. Go to our website, sportsnet.ca/960. Click on the events to find the New West Travel web link. It'll take you to where you can buy tickets, give you all the information as to what you're going to get. But if you do buy tickets, not only do you get to party nonstop with Boomer, Warner, and Pinder, which you will. I know they got to be up early into the morning show and they'll do that and they'll be semi-professional. But there's also a good amount of partying that goes into it. You get round-trip airfare with Transat Holidays, 7 nights at the Malia Puerto Vallarta overlooking the beautiful Banderas Bay, daily social activities, a welcome reception and dinner with the group, and more. So you're going down with the morning show and with a bunch of other Sportsnet 960 listeners. They'll probably fit in some Flames games on TV, lots of storytelling, and again, you get Rhett with a couple drinks in him, and you start grilling him about questions. He's going to open up, and he has got some, like, the stories he tells on the air are good, and you're like, they're funny. When you hear them, when they're not censored, they're funnier, and when you hear the stories he can't tell on the air, they're funnier, and they're outstanding. So it is a really cool trip. Again, sportsnet.ca/960. Click on the events page. It'll take you to the New West Travel web link, and you can find out all about tickets right there.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun, and our new partners at New West Travel, they do it upright. We learned some things, to be honest, from our last go-around, and we're improving things, and we've got a really professional partner with us, and we're looking forward to working with these guys. They're top-notch, and the resort is top-notch as well.
The next six games for the Toronto Blue Jays come against very beatable opponents. And now, some good news on top of all of that. We'll tell you about that good news next. Big Show continues on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Boomer, Warner, Pinder, Steinberg, and Kerr. Calgary Sports Authorities. Only on Sportsnet 960. Steinberg, Kerr, The Big Show on Sportsnet 960. Brought to you by The Comedy Cave. Tickets always $10. If it's comedy you crave, come to The Cave.
The Blue Jays start off a very winnable series against the Angels tonight, and they get some good news ahead of that series as well.
Kevin Pillar will be our everyday center fielder. Upton will spell the other, or all three of the outfielders, really, by playing all three for us.
That's GM Ross Atkins on MLB Network today. The Jays have activated the gentleman he's talking about, Kevin Pillar, off DL, which gives the Jays a bit of a boost going into a big week. Not only the series against the Angels, but the series after that against the Twins. Some very winnable games on the schedule over the next week. Let's go down the South Street Burger guest hotline. Welcome in our good friend, Shai Davini, our Blue Jays insider from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Shai, as always, appreciate this, my friend. How big a return is this, knowing that Kevin Pillar is back?
Well, it certainly helps. I mean, the Blue Jays have been down a couple regulars, important ones, and him and Edwin Encarnacion, and Jose Bautista, and in getting Kevin Pillar back, the lineup is a little bit longer. They're a little bit better defensively. They have a good alignment out there. You can play Upton in left and Saunders in right. So this is one of their better defensive outfields that they can play. And really, the Blue Jays have just been looking to have their team back. And so this is the first step. Jose Bautista is expected to return on Thursday. And if he does so, all of a sudden the Blue Jays will be whole and looking a little bit stronger.
First of all, before we get into Bautista, on Pillar, is he in the lineup tonight? Are we expecting him to play tonight?
Yeah, Kevin Pillar is in the lineup. He is batting seventh today. And you know, the Blue Jays don't have Devin Travis today because he's dealing with an issue in his knuckle. He had a cortisone shot today. He's expected to be ready tomorrow. So Kevin Pillar, they're trying to start him down low in the lineup, not put too much pressure on him, and let him ease his way back.
And the thought is Bautista back later on this week, right?
Right. The expectation is Thursday. He started playing in simulated games today. That's going to be the plan from this point onward. And working towards a return Thursday, which is his first day eligible to be activated from disablement.
How much of a boost does he give the team once he returns to this lineup?
Well, you can kind of answer that two ways, right? One, it depends what kind of form he's in. Is if this is Jose Bautista, the imposing hitter who does who's done damage the past 6-7 years, well, it's obviously a massive upgrade. If he's Jose Bautista, rusty slugger who's still trying to play on one knee because he's guarding an injury, then it's a different story. It's still an important addition to their presence. They're still obviously better with him than without him. But, you know, they need production from that spot. They miss his impact in the lineup, as any team would. And if they get him back and he can make an impact, then he's far more, he's going to do a lot to this team. Because right now, what he was the last little while before he got hurt was mostly just a presence who can be dangerous. But he wasn't dangerous on a right. steady basis. If he comes back and he's steadily dangerous, then this team's a lot better.
So, Shai, with Bautista set to come back in a couple of days, with Pilar returning tonight, and with what the Jays already have in the outfield, with everybody healthy, what is the ideal setup for Toronto in the outfield? How does it all work once everybody's good to go?
Well, John Gibbons said earlier today that his thought right now is that they might give Jose Bautista some more time in DH just to not put too much of a toll on his knee, even though then they say he's fine and he's moving well. I think they're going to try to guard it and not try to minimize the potential for a recurrence. So I think we probably see Melvin Upton in the outfield a little bit more often, along with Michael Saunders and Kevin Pillar. And, you know, they can adjust and rest as needed. I think when September rolls around, we'll see Dalton Pompey up here joining Ezekiel Carrera on the bench, protecting the outfield. And, you know, they could be worked in on occasion when guys need rest or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think what we'll probably see is a lot of Edwin Encarnacion at first base, a lot of Jose Bautista at DH, and Melvin Upton Jr. either in left or right field.
Shai Davidi of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca with us. We have to address this. I know that it's still very much in its infancy at this point, and there's very little that we can really jump off from. But over the last 24 hours, controversy surrounding the aforementioned Edwin Encarnacion and lawsuit and his girl and all that type of stuff. I know it's a lot of speculation right now. So, Shai, what do we know about this situation right now? What are the information kind of tidbits that we have at this point?
Well, we have two pieces of information. There's a lawsuit that's been filed at a district court in Eastern New York in the United States. And in it, there's an allegation made by a 24-year-old woman that Edwin Encarnacion knowingly transmitted a couple of sexually transmitted diseases to her. That lawsuit is seeking $1.5 million in damages and $10 million in punitive damages. And that was filed on the 22nd, which was yesterday, at the court in New York. Now, the agent for Edwin Encarnacion issued a statement to me this morning saying that the suit is baseless. That there's essentially nothing there, that they're considering launching some counterclaims against people involved in this action against Encarnacion, and that he won't be commenting on the matter further. So
right.
That's the situation right now as we know it. Unknown at this point if this is something that, you know, could in theory fall under Major League Baseball's domestic abuse policy. I'm not sure that this was a situation that would have been accounted for under that policy. And all these are allegations. Nothing's been proven in the court of law yet. So that's essentially the situation as it stands right now.
Exactly. And there's really not a whole lot else that we can say about it at this point either. I just wanted to make sure that we got everybody up to speed, because I know there has been a lot of talk and a lot of speculation, so appreciate that. He is our Blue Jays insider, Shai Davidi from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca, joining us here on the Big Show this afternoon. Okay, back to real baseball questions. I know it's been the topic du jour. I know you've written countless articles about it. I know you've probably been asked millions of times about it. But Aaron Sanchez optioned to single-A Dunedin over the last couple of days. Just for those who aren't aware and who have scratched their head and wonder, okay, well, why has this guy been optioned to single A? What is Toronto's motivation in doing this?
This is essentially a way for them to artificially restrain his workload this year. They're going to skip his start. He'll return on August 31st against the Baltimore Orioles in Baltimore and make a start there. So in order to keep him under a threshold which they feel comfortable for him to reach this season, they needed to do this. They'll probably have to do this another one or two times during the regular season in order to keep him fully available during the postseason should the Blue Jays reach that far. And so he's going to go down to Dunedin and just throw a couple side sessions. And the advantage of optioning him is that rather than having him sitting around here and essentially having an empty roster spot for 10 days, the Blue Jays get to have an extra reliever up. They were able to bring up Aaron Loop for that period of time. It gives them some flexibility with a couple of players, with Kevin Pillar being activated from the DL today and Jose Bautista due to be activated on Thursday.
So Sanchez goes down to single-A Dunedin. What does he do down there? Like, is it basically the same type of maintenance work he would have been doing in Toronto, just allowing them to open up a roster spot on the Major League team?
Exactly. He's going to go through his full normal routine as if he's starting for the next 10 days, but he's just not going to pitch off a mound. And so he's just going to get his work done. Going to Dunedin also makes sense as opposed to, say, Buffalo or New Hampshire or whatever, because the Blue Jays facility is there, their high-performance staff is there, all their resources are there. So it makes sense for him to be doing it there as opposed to somewhere else.
Listening to GM Ross Atkins talk today on the MLB Network, he talked about how the six-man rotation that they've got going right now benefits more than just Sanchez. He pointed to guys like Jay Happ and Marcus Stroman and Marco Estrada, who this benefits as well. What about you? Do you see the benefit for guys like that?
Well, you know, it's a double-edged sword. Like, sure, they're getting a bit of extra rest, but they're also out of routine. And, you know, there have been a few times where guys have gone on 6-7 days of rest because of off days and the way that's all worked out. So I think the guys in the rotation are going to be happy to have a turn on the normal 4 or 5 days of rest as opposed to 6 or 7. And they can get back and feel like they're no more normal again. But the thing is, the six-man rotation is going to be coming back. And as soon as Aaron Sanchez returns, how long it lasts, again, we don't know. But ultimately, this is something that the results are going to show whether or not it works or not. And, you know, as much as guys may like or dislike it and have different feelings about it, you know, if this is what it's taking to keep Aaron Sanchez in the rotation, I think the consensus is that it's worthwhile.
So what's your gut say? Because we don't really know how this is going to turn out. What's your gut say? Does this continue for the rest of the regular season? And is Aaron Sanchez part of the rotation come the postseason?
I would think that unless there is some sort of physical setback, Aaron Sanchez will be in the rotation for the rest of the year. In terms of what they'll do, man, I think they're going to be very creative in terms of the decision-making with when they pull out Aaron Sanchez. We'll probably see them skip him one or two more starts. And two of the starts that he's got that he's on turn for right now in September against the Angels in Anaheim and against the Mariners in Seattle. And, you know, those are some bullets that they could probably save and use elsewhere. So I think that's probably the likely scenario of what we'll see happen.
So it's the Angels tonight and for this midweek series, and then the Twins over the weekend, 6 games against very beatable opponents. I know how important that series that looms next week against Baltimore is, 2 more series still to go against Boston in September and October, so on and so forth. But for me, Shai, these series against the beatable opponents, these are the ones you need to end up winning. Well, what about you? How big a week is this coming up for Toronto?
Yeah, this is absolutely critical. I mean, this is the time for them to clean up. And they absolutely need to probably win at minimum 4, but probably 5, if not 6 of these games, because these are 2 teams that they should be beating rather handily. And this is an opportunity for them to make up some ground while, you know, the other teams are facing tougher opponents. So, you know, these games are always dangerous. A cliche to say the teams are playing spoiler and things of that nature, but that is certainly what happens to some degree at this point in time. And the Blue Jays can't allow themselves to fall victim to either of these teams.
Final thought for you. R.A. Dickey on the mound tonight. Just set us up. What are you looking for tonight as the Jays open up this series against the Angels?
Well, I mean, they're facing Tyler Skaggs, who they've had trouble with at times in the past, but you know, it's not the same Tyler Skaggs who's had some injury issues and is returning from them this year. And the Blue Jays really, they've had a tough time, surprisingly, with left-handed pitchers this year, given how right-handed dominant their lineup is. But you know, this is a team that they should be able to have, Bill, and that Ari Dickey should be able to maneuver about with, you know, really two hitters in Albert Pujols and Mike Trout that, you know, you need to be significantly fearful of.
Shai, as always, appreciate this, my friend. Enjoy the game tonight, and we shall talk to you again soon.
No problem. Take care.
He is Shai Davidi, our Sportsnet Blue Jays insider on both Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Joins us down the South Street Burger Guest Hotline, made with 100% Angus beef, raised without antibiotics or hormones. Try their signature burgers or build your own South Street Burger. Better burgers, fries, shakes. We will take you to Rogers Center just after the top of the hour in its entirety. Game one of this set between the Jays and the Angels. Matty Rose has got your headlines around the corner. Final hour of the Big Show kicks off in about 90 seconds here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.